Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts.
And Trevor Anderson here, Billboard's chart manager slash editorial liaison.
This is where we look to look at what's on the charts and why what's on the charts. And Trevor, I'm just happy you're here. I thought you might run off with Kelly Rowland after your session with her last week.
Kelly Rowland was in the office last week. I guess this is actually probably a great time to get some shout outs to the other Billboard audio podcast. She was here recording an episode of Soul Sisters that'll be airing sometime in the next few weeks, it sounds like. And while she was here, you know, you just get a nice photo op. I'm from Houston. I grew up with Destiny's Child, so yeah,
there was a connection. Maybe you didn't feel it. Everyone watching, you could see something.
Yeah, I'm sure Kelly Rowland is really going to be going after me sometime soon on that Cougar game. So I'll wait for the DM.
You've sort of become the point person for artists come in, they sign the Billboard Book of Number One Hits, written by Fred Bronson, who started Chartbeat. And for all the number ones, you pointed all the pages, they signed them. And I remember Kelly pointed to one of them and said she hated doing that song live in concert. And it was kind of surprising. It was one of their best-known songs, Destiny's Child.
Kelly said that the song Bootylicious, which I don't think she didn't realize it went to number one. It kind of zoomed to number one. If you want to get back into the history of it, it really jumped up there. But yeah, she said that they don't really like the song because if you've ever seen it perform it live, it takes a lot of dance moves, a lot of energy, a lot of sweat.
Welcome again to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. A lot of the stuff on this week's episode. We're going to run down the top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100, which includes Harry Styles' debut. Ed Sheeran, Shape of You, number one again. We'll take a really deep look at that in our insider interview this week. We're going to really just break down the song almost minute by minute here on the podcast with Yael and Dave Penn from Hit Songs Deconstructed. And we'll flash back 27 years, 1990, the number one song this week on the Hot 100 back then. But first, this week's top 10.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
Okay, and make sure you guys check out this week's top 10. Here we go. Enjoy. We were staying in bed.
Girlie, I can get yet, cause she don't get too many likes. A curly headed cutie I could turn into my wife. Wait, that means forever, ever, hold up, never mind. Oh, I spy the love.
Ed Sheeran's Shape of You, number one for a 12th week on the Billboard Hot 100. I don't want to say too much because, again, we just mentioned that we're going to go really in-depth about the song coming up. But 12 weeks at number one on the Hot 100, huge deal. One of only 18 songs all time in the Hot 100's history to be number one for at least that long.
Yeah, obviously it's still climbing up. It's, again, I mean, the first quarter really, in a lot of ways, belonged to Ed Sheeran. And I think even though, you know, people were anticipating the song and the album since it first came out, I don't think anybody quite expected the song in particular to be as big as it's gotten. I mean, it just seems like, you know, people thought, okay, when it debuted at number one, that in a way seemed expected, normal. But, you know, to have held on really, again, a dozen weeks and maybe more, I think is something that people, you know, really, really weren't foreseeing.
Yeah, Bruno Mars, That's What I Like, at number two. It is closing the gap a little bit, so you can sort of see at this point, if the songs keep moving the way they are, it's possible Bruno could overtake Shape of You. Mask Off by Future is certainly making a big jump as well.
The Mask Off challenge.
One of two challenges. Crazy. In the top ten.
Yeah, obviously Mask Off is doing very well. I'm sure probably plenty of people have seen on social media the sort of the violins and the flutes, and it's kind of a cool challenge because not that the ones that focus on dancing aren't cool or like neat, but something that, you know, an instrument based challenge, something people really don't normally see.
Right.
And especially to a Future song, which, even though there are a lot of, you know, orchestral instruments in his music, it's kind of interesting to see, like, you know, 13-year-old violin players and Future mashed up, and it's like, yo.
And the Lil Uzi Vert challenge at number eight.
Yeah, so that's helping the EXO Tour Life song, which, you know, Uzi Vert's having, I mean, people have kind of been watching it for a moment, waiting for that breakout. Obviously seems to have come in the past, you know, couple months, and especially, you know, a lot of rappers who get their first featured credits and blowing up sort of featured stuff. He's on Bad and Bougie, I'm sure plenty of people know, but to also see them kind of break out on their own and, you know, get their own kind of shine and credits, always good too.
So potential contenders for number one. The other song, a huge first week in the Hot 100's top 10, Harry Styles, Sign of the Times, debuts at number four. Pretty historic stuff when you look at it this way. Zayn debuted at number one with Pillow Talk, his first solo single last year. Yeah. Also debuted in the top 10 with Taylor Swift on I Don't Want to Live Forever. And now Harry Styles has debuted in the top 10. No other group in the entire Hot 100's history has ever had two soloists debut in the top 10 with singles. So One Direction is the first to do that.
I mean, the fan base obviously is super strong. You see that with, you know, they always get number one albums, and a lot of their songs, you know, debut in the top 10 of the Hot 100 and do really well out of the gate. So
other boy bands, New Kids on the Block, did have two members have top 10s. They just didn't debut in the top 10 with their hits. Kind of interesting. They were both about a month apart in 1999, fairly, you know, about a decade after their dominance. Joey McIntyre and Jordan Knight both hit the top 10 in spring 1999. Nick and Joe Jonas have both had top 10s from the Jonas Brothers. I thought it's kind of interesting. You look back at one of the biggest era, maybe the biggest modern era for boy bands was Backstreet Boys and NSYNC.
What do you mean maybe?
The Beatles. You could look at the Beatles. You know, you weren't alive for how big New Kids on the Block were in 1990.
Those
are big. They were big.
I mean, I get it, but still.
So you're saying unquestionably NSYNC, Backstreet Boys is the boy band era.
Yeah. I mean that just generated a whole new, like, that was the sound, little, right. You know, young pop. I mean, that washed away, you know, the Alanis Morissettes and the sort of grungy rock. I mean, you know, when teen pop hit in 97,
right.
It took over.
And Max Martin, the writer of a lot of those songs, has never stopped having hits.
Yeah. I mean, and even as sort of that sound kind of went in and out, you know, hip hop came around in the 2000s and took over for a while. Max Martin still was kind of, you know, working underground.
But if you look at for all their success, Justin Timberlake is the only member of either NSYNC or Backstreet Boys to have a top 10 hit solo.
I will be right by your side. If I can't find the cure, I'll fix you with my love. No matter what you know, I'll fix you with my love. And if you say you're okay, I'm gonna heal you anyway. Promise I'll always be there. Promise I'll be the cure.
And another song to watch for next week, talking about the top 10 of the Hot 100, could debut in the top 10. We're not sure yet. Lady Gaga's new song, The Cure.
Yeah, interesting song there. She debuted it during her Coachella set. She was headlining last weekend, just added to the set list kind of out of nowhere, said she wanted to keep it a surprise from people, hadn't really told anybody about it, performs it live for the first time right then, right there, and then it goes on sale at iTunes and Spotify and hits all the retailers. Really hit number one on iTunes pretty quickly. It was there for most of the weekend. So, you know, the Little Monsters, of course, were out there grabbing it up. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, where it does end up because, I mean, again, no one really saw it coming. It sounds more like kind of the modern, you know, current state of top 40. So right. it fits in there pretty easily. Haven't really heard too many negative things about it. I know for, like, Perfect Illusion, not that there were negative things, but people definitely saw it as more of a polarizing kind of jarring song. Either you were with it or you weren't. This one seems to have a lot more people going in, you know, coming off the success of Million Reasons that she had after the Super Bowl. Definitely, you know, people are paying attention to Gaga again, really excited for her. So this could definitely work in her favor.
Yeah, the song is certainly in that that trap house vibe that's been so big now for a couple of years. So we'll find out next week on the Hot 100 where that debuts. But talking about that sound. That's the sound that really is working. It's all over Shape of You by Ed Sheeran. And that's what we're going to get into right now with our guest this week. It's Yael and Dave Penn. They're the co-founders of Hit Songs Deconstructed. If you've listened to the podcast before, we've had them on before, just breaking down in-depth hit songs, really like no one else, just really picking apart songs, choruses, the hooks, the verses, and really just going in deep in terms of how songs are written and why they connect. So we're happy to have him back here on the podcast talking about Shape of You, Ed Sheeran, again, Yael and Dave Penn from Hit Songs Deconstructed here on the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yael and Dave Penn, both here on the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast from Hit Songs Deconstructed. Welcome back to the podcast, guys.
Hello, Gary. Great to be back.
You guys, every time you've been here on the podcast, I just sit back and listen because you guys are just the authorities on breaking down hit songs. It's been so cool.
Well, we love doing it, so definitely thrilled to be back. Thank you for having us.
All right. This week we're going to talk about Shape of You, really go deep into why the song's been such a big hit, for number one for 3 months on the Billboard Hot 100. Real quick, Yael, you're both founders of Hit Songs Deconstructed. Just recap exactly what Hit Songs Deconstructed is. What do you guys do?
Okay, so what we do at Hit Songs Deconstructed is we track the compositional characteristics and the songwriting and production techniques for the songs that land in the Billboard Hot 100 Top 10. So what makes Hit Songs Deconstructed unique is that we complement resources that are tracking sales, streams, and radio airplay, because we're focusing on the songs at the compositional level. So our reports and our immersion searchable database provide data and analysis that reflect the current state of mainstream music. And our subscribers use it in order to understand what the characteristics are for the songs that are in the top 10.
So it's a lot of writers and producers digging in deep. I've looked at some of the reports you guys do. Some of them, you print them out. It's like 80 pages long. Oh, just how every part
we're
of the song.
We're over 100 now.
100.
Yeah, they keep growing. However, we did just launch a report that's like a streamlined version of that 80-page, 100-page report. So if you want the Cliff Notes, we've got that too.
Yeah, we have the Cliff's Notes now. Yeah.
Now, it's pretty fascinating stuff because there's really no one else I know breaking down songs like this on basically a second by second level of what makes a song a hit and why certain trends repeat and how those songs become hits.
And there's so much to learn from these songs. I mean, that's the most amazing part, you know, because a lot of people think, you know, with pop songs, just very simplistic, I could write that in my sleep kind of stuff. But when you dig down to this, like Max Martin songs, for example, you realize how meticulously well-crafted these songs are. So there's just so much to extract.
What's interesting about Shape of You is just reading how Ed Sheeran said he wasn't even going to put this on an album. He originally wrote it with Rihanna in mind, but then when it was going to be his, he just thought, oh, that was fun. It's just a throwaway kind of thing. It always amazes me how many artists never recognize when they've written what winds up being a huge hit song.
Yeah, and I read, I don't know if it's true or not, but, you know, the defining factor for him to keep it for himself was, you know, once he put Van the Man on the jukebox, that line with Van Morrison, he's like, can't imagine Rihanna singing that. That would be very interesting if she did, but... But it's just an amazingly well-crafted song. So,
well, get into it, Dave. This is always where you just take over. You teach the class. We take notes. On a basic level, when you break down the song itself, how has Shape of You become such a big number one hit on the Hot 100?
Well, listen, at its core, you know, it's just a really well-crafted song that possesses many of the qualities that we find in the songs that land in the upper reaches of the Hot 100 Top 10. So, for example, engaging in universal lyrics, the inclusion of infectious hooks, you know, short, memorable phrases that repeat throughout a song. Adhering to the Kiss Me principle, which is keep it simple, singable, and memorable. Being in tune with the sounds and the trends of the day. And also possessing a unique quality that sets it apart from many of its mainstream contemporaries. That's very important.
Yeah, you've brought that up before, Dave, that a song, sort of that magic, if there is one sort of key to having a hit, it's sounding like other songs but still being unique.
Absolutely. You know, it's the effective blend of the familiar and the unique that helps a song to connect with a wide audience while at the same time standing out in relation to many of its mainstream contemporaries. That truly is the key, along with simplicity. So what we're going to do is look at some of the characteristics that help Shape of You both blend in and stand out, and also go through some of the song sections to see how it's constructed to make it really infectious, engaging, and memorable. So let's start with the lyrics, which is about a guy who sets out to find a lover, finds a girl that he's really attracted to, hooks up, and winds up falling for her in the process. But despite how much he may care for her, it's her looks and the sex that really seem to be the defining factor. So while a sex-based theme isn't really that out of the ordinary in the Hot 100 Top 10, the fact that Ed Sheeran is singing about sex is. So most of his other hits focus on more, you know, love and relationships, such as Photograph and Thinking Out Loud. So this provides Shape of You with some, you know, more intrigue compared to his other hits, which enables it to further stand out. but he's also conveying the narrative in the universally engaging storytelling type manner for which he's known, and also utilizing like a plethora of imagery and action and detail to ensure that connects and engages the audience on a profound level. So let's also look at some of Shape of You's genre influences. So Ed Sheeran is mostly known for fusing singer-songwriter and folk influences in his hits, and Shape of You does possess these influences, which makes it sound familiar to his fans. However, singer-songwriter and folk are generally not popular influences in the top 10 of the Hot 100, so this helps Shape of You to stand out in more of a unique manner compared to many of its mainstream contemporaries. Now, on the flip side, we have Tropical, which is Shape of You's primary influence. So as you know, Tropical has been one of the hottest trends in the top 10 since last summer, and Shape of You certainly capitalized on this trend. However, Ed Sheeran is not known for doing Tropical. So because it's an anomaly for Ed Sheeran, it helps the song to further stand out amongst his overall body of work and really stand out amongst his fans.
Right. Yeah, no, I think on first listen, it sounded a little bit like I Don't Want to Know, Maroon 5, some of the Bieber
stuff
from
and
the last couple
of years.
That's
one of the key familiarity factors there, because it's capitalizing on this trend, so it sounds very familiar to people. Exactly. And the last standout factor that we're going to take a look at are some of Shape of You's instruments, in particular the mallets and the acoustic guitar body hand-tap percussion. So the use of prominent, like, marimba-esque mallets is quite rare in the top 10. There are only a few other recent hits, like you were just mentioning, that utilize them in a prominent fashion. Maroon 5's Don't Want to Know, Charlie Puth's We Don't Talk Anymore, and also Fifth Harmony's Work From Home as well.
Right.
Prominent mallets, but still, pretty rare. Now, even more rare than the mallets is the guitar body hand-tap percussion, which is where Sheeran is using the acoustic guitar as a percussive instrument as opposed to just strumming chords. So this provides Shape of You with a highly distinctive sound compared to most of its contemporaries. You don't see that too much. Actually, I can't remember any place that I've heard that in the last few years.
Yeah.
And both of these standout elements are introduced right at the very beginning of the song in the intro. So this enables it to easily cut through airwave clutter, grab the listener's attention, and hook them into the song. At the same time, they also establish the song's infectious groove, which remains in effect throughout every single section except for the bridge. But there's still a rhythmic quality in the bridge that keeps an element of that rhythm going on. So let's take a listen to that intro here. Now what we're going to do is take a tour throughout some of the song's sections to really see what makes it so infectious, infectious, engaging, and memorable. And we're going to pick it up in the second half of the song, starting with the second verse and continue through the grand finale and the outro. And what we'll do is first listen to the sections so you can get acquainted with it, then dive into the characteristics behind it, and then listen to it one more time so you can hear how it all comes together. So we're going to pick it up now in the second verse.
When we came, we let the story begin. We're going out on our first date. Mm-hmm. You and me are thrifty, so go all you can eat. Fill up your bag and I fill up the plate. Mm-hmm. We talk for hours and hours about the sweet and the sour and how your family's doing okay. Mm-hmm. And leaving, getting a taxi, kissing the backseat, tell the driver, make the radio play. And I'm singing like...
All right, let's start with the lyrics. So where the first verse sets the scene and establishes the mission of the protagonist, which is essentially to find a lover, by the time we get to the second verse, he's already accomplished his mission, and they go out on their first date. So here, development takes place in the narrative, where it focuses now on the emotional side of the relationship, as opposed to just the physical, which provides the song with increased depth and engagement value. Now, vocally, along with the first verse, it's the most rhythmically complex and loose in the scope of the song. It also features the longest length lines, and adheres the least to the Kiss Me principle. So it's not as, easily digestible and memorable as some of the other sections in the song, as we'll soon see. However, it's conveyed in a primarily monotone manner, which enables that melodically vibrant mallet groove to shine front and center in the mix. And lastly, the first three lines all conclude with that nonsense vocal, which acts as an additional infectious element and also helps to create familiarity both within the section and the song as well, since the first verse also features this vocal.
When we came, we let the story begin. We're going out on our first date. Mm. You and me are thrifty, so go all you can eat. Fill up your bag and I fill up the plate.
Mm-hmm. We talk for hours and hours about the sweet and the sour and how your family's doing okay. Mm-hmm. And leaving, getting a taxi, kissing the backseat, tell the driver, make the radio play. And I'm singing like...
All right, so now we're going to check out the pre-chorus. Let's take a listen.
Girl, you know I want your love. Your love was handmade for somebody like me. Come on now, follow my lead. I may be crazy, don't mind me. Say, boy, let's not talk too much. Grab on my waist and put that body on me. Come on now, follow my lead. Come, come on now, follow my lead.
So the primary role of the pre-chorus is essentially to transition the listener from the verse into the chorus. So here that's being done by both the protagonist and the antagonist expressing their desire for one another, which culminates in the chorus that follows. Now, typically, you know, the pre-chorus isn't the most interesting section in the song. However, Shape of You's pre-chorus has two very interesting qualities. The first is that it's the only section that conveys both the protagonist and the antagonist's point of view in the first and second half of the section, respectively. So the pre-chorus would have essentially worked very well as a male-female duet, male-female duet. But it's not. It only features Ed Sheeran. So what he cleverly does is sing the second half of the section in a higher register, which provides the antagonist with a unique voice and accentuates the impact of the narrative in the process.
Girl, you know I want your love. Your love was handmade for somebody like me. Come on now, follow my lead. I may be crazy, don't mind me. Say, boy, let's not talk too much. Grab on my waist and put that body on me.
So it's a really interesting way to add engagement value to a song if it's not a duet, but it, you know, gives this, you know, increased depth to the narrative by providing the antagonist's point of view. But how do you accentuate that within a solo male vocal song? You sing in a higher register if you could pull it off, and all of a sudden you have the female conveying that, which is really cool.
Yeah, because a lot of songs, I guess, if people put in other points of view, they'll kind of say, you know, I remember when you said XYZ or whatever, and they'll kind of keep it in their same voice. But I mean, the fact that he does that flip and plays both roles, that's the cool thing about
that.
Yeah,
it's a really clever twist, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, thinking outside the box from a compositional standpoint.
Right.
It's really effective. So the other really interesting aspect of the pre-chorus is that, you know, its infectious vocal melody has already been tested in the mainstream and proven to be very effective. And this is because it closely resembles the chorus melody in TLC's 1999 hit, No Scrubs, for which those writers were later credited. So if you're wondering where that melody came from, if it sounds familiar, that's where it came from.
It worked once before.
Yeah, exactly.
Heck, the first time.
Hey, why not? Recycle.
And he's given credit, so now the credits have been
absolutely
added. So it's not just that.
But it really works well within the song.
Right.
You know, I mean, here, you know, you don't have the whole song based around the TLC song. You have one specific section which worked out to be, you know, quite infectious. So
Trevor and I have talked about that on the podcast before, about how we've seen that happen now with other songs like Uptown Funk. It turns out after they become hits, credits are being added afterwards because people realized it sounded like something else. Is that
Closer is another one.
Yeah.
Perfect.
You've seen more of that, Dave, from what you've seen, or is it just a tradition? We know what's happened in the past.
You know, it's interesting. I think, you know, from what I've seen, it's artists were drawing more off of obscure older songs in the past, where now, you know, they're starting to get inspired by, you know, newer songs. But that means I'm getting older, so I don't know. But you know, like even, you know, going back to 2005 or 1999 or whatever. So I think the, you know, more contemporary songs are being used in that manner and, you know, influencing other hits.
I mean, interesting that, you know, a lot of social media, a lot of users out there are really the ones who first notice these kind of trends and are really, you know, wait a minute, doesn't that sound like XYZ? And I mean, the fact that the public is just so conscious of like a lot of these hits that are coming up from, you know, sort of their day and their growing up, that makes it so much easier for a lot of people to be like, wait a minute, like this does sound like XYZ.
Yeah. Copyright attorneys are having a field day with this.
Yeah.
You know? No, because, I mean, seriously, I mean, how, you know, you're not reinventing the wheel with every composition. Everything is inspired by something else. But you got to make sure that the, you know, it's not verbatim or not too close. And if it's kind of borderline, maybe you settle, you know, right off the bat and just, you know, clear everything so there's no problems down the road.
Kind of going back to what you're saying of that fine line between standing out and still being unique.
It's exactly.
Still sounding like something but still having its own vibe.
Exactly. So long as people heard of TLC, you know. So which I think, you know, most people in the mainstream probably have, but you know, for a younger audience maybe not familiar
right.
with TLC. So this could also work to TLC's benefit because you're giving new exposure to right. a hit that was back in 1999. True. So it's kind of a win-win for everybody in right. the end. So so now let's get to the most important thing, which is the hook and payoff sections, you know, which is really what makes a song so infectious, engaging, and memorable. So 61% of Shape of You's entire composition is spent what I call in its hook centers, which are basically sections that feature infectious hooks at their core. Now, the listener remains locked within these hook centers for five consecutive sections, beginning in the second chorus and lasting right through the end of the song. So this is, you know, really one of the key reasons why the listener remains engaged at a heightened level and why they can't get the song out of their head. So let's begin by listening to the second chorus here.
I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too. I'm in love with your body. Last night you were in my room. And now my bedsheets smell like you. Every day discovering something.
So lyrically, the chorus provides the summation of the narrative following the developments that transpired in the verse and pre-chorus sections. So the protagonist set out to find a lover, he found one, they hook up, and now he's in love with her body. Now what's clever about the narrative is that it conveys the act of hooking up in an under-the-radar type manner. And this is done by using the analogy of magnets pushing and pulling, as well as the line, and last night you were in my room, and now my bed sheets smell like you. So I don't think that they were sitting in bed watching TV. I think something else is probably going on there. So by inferring the act of sex, instead of like graphically depicting it, it keeps the song radio friendly without the need for massive edits. Now melodically, it's more simplistic and repetitive compared to the verse and pre-chorus sections, and possesses a very engaging ascending-descending type flow. So together, this enables the chorus to really, you know, connect with the listener and totally get ingrained in their head.
I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too. I'm in love with your body. Last night you were in my room. And now my bedsheets smell like you. Every day discovering something brand new.
So following the chorus, now we get into the post-chorus, which is even more hooky.
I'm in love with your body. I'm in love with your body. I'm in love with your body. Every day discovering something brand new.
So this post-chorus section is even more simplistic than the chorus that precedes it. Features a newly introduced OI hook, which provides the song with a new infectious spin. And it's directly followed by I'm in love with your body, and that hook was previously featured in the chorus. And like the chorus, they feature this, you know, ascending, descending melodic relationship, which provides the section with a highly engaging flow. The section then concludes in essentially the same manner as the chorus, with a difference being that the I'm in love with the shape of you line is used instead of I'm in love with your body. So all in all, it's the combination of the new and recycled hooks that provides the song with a fresh and engaging spin while at the same time keeping the memorability factor at a high. And one of the things to note is that additional instrumental elements are tacked onto the core mallet and guitar percussion groove, which provides it with increased power, texture, and dimension compared to the preceding sections.
I'm in love with your body.
Now we get to the bridge.
Come on, be my baby, come on. 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 Come on, be my baby, come on.
So the bridge is even more simplistic and more repetitive than the vocal break, which was more simplistic and repetitive than the chorus. So you could see a little simplification trend going on here.
So he just keeps narrowing it down until we keep getting to the catchier parts as the song goes along.
Exactly. It starts out with a more complex in the verse sections, which are more loose and more, rhythmically diverse. Then it starts to simplify with get a little bit more hooky in the pre-chorus sections, which was inspired by TLC. Then it gets into the chorus section, which is even more simplistic and repetitive. And then you get into the vocal break, which is even more. And now you're in the bridge, which is just a repetition of one line.
It's like he's building his case throughout the song for why this is so catchy, and he just keeps more and more
I think
hitting you.
This is the hit.
It's easy to sing along as
right.
well. You know,
do you find that with a lot of other songs? We've really hit that point here, but other songs, you found that, Dave?
Well, not
by the end of the song, you're hearing the hook like that?
Well, not necessarily in the bridge, but quite a few songs use this post-chorus, which is basically just reiterating hooks that were previously established in the chorus. So where the chorus might provide the summation of the narrative and, be more lyrically in-depth, in the post-chorus, it's a hook center.
Right.
The main hook center. So this is just one short phrase, another short phrase. It might be instrumental, it might be vocal, and you just keep, hammering that into the listener. And then we'll see later in the song that some of these hook centers actually intertwine to conclude the song on a really interesting level.
So. And you leave the listener with a high note, with the catchiest part at the
100%.
End. 100%. Just fades out like
and they hit that replay button just like that.
Yep.
Exactly. Keep them going back.
and repetition was the word you kept using, how you hear in a lot of those hooks. It's the same words. It's a hallmark of pop music.
Absolutely. I mean, so this section solely features the repetition of the newly introduced Come On, Be My Baby, Come On vocal, which provides a development in the narrative where the protagonist, essentially declaring that he wants the antagonist to be his girlfriend. So the section begins in a very sparse manner, consisting solely of hand claps and Sharon's vocal. So not only does this provide engaging contrast compared to the intense post-chorus that precedes it, but it also functions as a clever audience participation element built right into the song. It's very easy to imagine Ed Sheeran getting an audience to clap and sing along at this point.
Right.
Because of its simplicity and the repetitive nature and the clap accompaniment instead of the drums. And in order to prevent the section from becoming overly monotonous, considering its repetitive qualities, additional vocal layers and guitar are added in the second half of the section, which helps to keep it fresh and engaging as it progresses. So there you got all that repetition going on, but you also have some harmonized vocals and you have the acoustic guitar, which basically prevents it from becoming overly monotonous and starting to bore the listener. Last thing you want to do. So let's take a listen to that again.
Come on, be my baby, come on. 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 Come on, be my baby, come on.
So following the bridge, the song goes back into the chorus and then heads into the outro, which is where we're going to pick things up.
Come on, be my baby, come on, come on, be
I'm
my
in love
baby.
With your body.
Come on, be my baby, come on, come on, be
I'm
my
in love
baby.
With your body.
Come on, be my baby, come on, be
I'm
my
in
baby.
Love with your body. Every day discovering something brand new. I'm in love with the shape.
So essentially, you could think of the outro as like the grand finale of a fireworks show. All the stops are being pulled in order to leave the listener on an excited and satiated high. And this is done by keeping the listener locked into the infectious groove of the preceding chorus while cleverly fusing together hooks from both the bridge and the post-chorus into one over-the-top section. So from the bridge, we get the repetition of the Come On, Be My Baby, Come On hook. And from the post-chorus, we get the repetition of I'm in love with your body, so that hook, as well as the last two lines in the post-chorus, which is every day discovering something brand new, I'm in love with the shape of you.
Come on, be my baby, come on, come on,
I'm in love with your body.
Come on, be my baby, come on, come on,
I'm in love with your body.
Come on, be my baby, come on, be
I'm in love with your body. Every day discovering something brand new, I'm in love with the shape.
So like you were saying, Gary, this technique is really a hallmark of a really effective outro. And we see that quite a bit in the
right.
songs that land within the top 10. Another one, for example, is, what's the name of the song? Side to Side, Ariana Grande and Nicki Minaj.
Right.
So just, you know, for example, that outro fuses together Nicki Minaj's vocal from The Bridge and Ariana Grande's background chorus vocal, which is, I'm not going to sing it for you. But anyway, trust me, it fixes her vocal. And I thought about it for a second.
Yael, this
sorry
is the,
against
the, that. You can do the female vocals.
Yeah, actually, Yael does it pretty well. And it also, you know, reverts back to the sparse reggae accompaniment in the intro. So there's right. another, you know, recent example of a song that's fusing together some of the most infectious elements from other sections and kind of like putting together a collage at the very end of the song.
Yeah, you know, I never thought this before, Dave, until you just ran through all this. It's sort of like a TV show or a movie where at the end all the storylines come together and
Absolutely.
It makes the big conclusion at the end.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is a whole other probably podcast, but, you know, one thing that happens when we watch movies now, especially, you know, commercial movies, it's like watching a pop song unfold. You know, you have the narrative developing, and then all of a sudden you have the big chase scene, which is like the chorus, and then there's another narrative development in the big chase scene, then somebody gets kidnapped, and then you have another chase scene, and then they're all happy, and they, you know. I'm
that?
Telling you, man.
You guys just can't watch TV now without turning it into work.
We can't do anything. So. Nothing has to do with anything analytical. But, yeah, but I mean, that's the whole thing. As you said, leaving the listener on that really excited high, and as you said, you know, wanting more, you know, and that's what it's really all about.
Interesting, as always, Dave and Yael, just making us think, I'm sure, people listening, of if songs just kind of hit you. You don't always think about why they become hits, but a lot of what you just said really explains the real reasoning why we like these songs. I just find it so interesting, Dave and Yael, every single time.
Oh, pleasure to be here.
All right, there's more for you guys to talk about. Want to get to other things.
Cool.
Can you guys come back and we'll get into some other trends of music and also talk about Chainsmokers Closer? I know
yep.
you guys have some thoughts how that's become one of the biggest pop hits really in the last year, really of all time
yeah.
at this point. So love to have you guys back next time. We'll dig deeper.
Absolutely.
Love
Looking forward
back.
To it. Thanks, Gary. Thanks, Trevor.
Thank you.
It's been 7 hours and 50 days since you took your love away.
Okay, so Ed Sheeran's Shape of You, as we learned there, you know, he was thinking about maybe pitching it for Rihanna, and interesting that he was thinking about writing a song for her. As you guys also sure remember, he co-wrote Justin Bieber's Love Yourself last year, so Ed Sheeran being a really prolific songwriter, kind of moonlighting for other artists while he's obviously has his own career. We're going to take a flashback to another situation, another artist who moonlit for another successful number one hit on the Hot 100. That would be Prince. Way back in 1990, he wrote the song Nothing Compares to You, which Sinead O'Connor recorded, and took that straight to number one 27 years ago already, which, I mean, that's... It's kind of crazy that 1990.
That long ago. I remember it, Trevor. Even if you weren't born,
I
remember 1990.
I was not born, but even I was a group in the 90s. So for the 90s to be like 25, 27 years ago is
right. Ridiculous.
But yes, so Prince obviously at this time massive superstar. Everyone you know knows him. Purple Rain has been out. Sign of the Times has been out. And he actually written this song. Back, you know, in the late 80s for some of his own band members. It never really materialized for their recording. And somehow Sinead O'Connor kind of just came across it. Someone suggested she record it. It had been out there. She records it. Takes it, like we said, to number one. I mean, it really was, for sure, is the definitive Sinead O'Connor song. Really, unquestionably, her massive hit. Helps her album get to number one. Picks her up a couple Grammys. So really introduces her to the audience. So really, you know, just a massive hit for her, Gary. Do you remember the time, what it was like? Because, you know, the video is pretty iconic with her, just, you know, the tears, and it's kind of sad.
Yeah, the video was huge. The song really stood out because nothing compared to it. Nothing else sounded like it because it was so stark. This is when, you know, Madonna was big with Vogue. Everything was just very produced at the time, and this song just really stopped everything if it came on the radio. So it really had its own sound. It really connected. But, you know, the main thing that sort of took over the storyline is that Sinead just pretty quickly, everyone could tell she just wasn't comfortable in the spotlight of fame. it's not a, everyone handles it differently, but it was a couple years later that she went on Saturday Night Live, did that famous performance where she ripped up a picture of the Pope, and that caught Saturday Night Live by surprise because she, in rehearsal, had held up a picture of a refugee child.
Right, yeah.
And thought it would just be that. And then during the live show, she rips up a picture of the Pope. Lorne Michaels, everyone had no idea what was happening. And he's since said that he sort of felt both ways about it. One, sort of felt a little betrayed that someone did something on his show that they weren't expecting. But at the same time, he also respected her artistic expression and freedom. And here we are still talking about it all these years later.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, that moment for a lot of people really sunk her career. And she had been, even before that, that was really the one that broke the camel's back. But even before then, you know, she didn't want the Star Spangled Banner played at one of her performances.
Right.
She had boycotted the Grammys because she thought they were very materialistic and kind of self-serving, which is, you know, one of the big critiques there. But she, as someone who won that night, not even a nominee or just, you know, a celebrity attending, boycotting that is a crazy thing. So yeah, I mean, for her to do that, especially for someone who kind of came out of nowhere, and I think people really thought that, you know, maybe she owes them something for, you know, all this money that she has, all this attention that she now has, all these cares that are gone. It's crazy.
This is long before Twitter and Facebook. I can't imagine how big the reaction would have been if social media
she ripped up the picture of the Pope on SNL. Yeah, she'd been trending for, oh God, it'd have been interesting. I mean, all the takes would have been out there and everyone would have, you know, this and that.
Talking about Prince, the anniversary,
yes,
of his passing this week.
Yeah, kind of a weird lineup in the chart calendar, that basically the week that Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares to You went to number one, 26 years later, is the same week that Prince unfortunately passes away.
And the other huge hit he wrote for another act was Bangles' Manic Monday back in 1986.
Yeah.
That got to number two. So beyond his own hits, he's written hits for other acts.
Hey, don't forget I Feel For You, Chaka Khan.
Right.
Was a number three hit on the Hot 100, won him a Best R&B Song Grammy. So, again, just another influence. And it kind of shows, it's cool how, I'm sure people kind of know this, but they don't know if they appreciate it as much, that how diverse he was. I mean, take those three songs, for example, Manic Monday, you know, kind of a light pop song. You've got I Feel For You, obviously, you know, 5.5 minutes of R&B funk influence, and then Nothing Compares to You. This sort of stark ballad, you know, alternative leaning. And Prince, you know, single-handedly wrote all three of those.
Yeah, the one that always hits me is Manic Monday, because it's just a perfect pop song. He never really recorded that kind of sound on his own. He always just had a more R&B lean.
But hopefully that gives people at least a little background about some of his songwriting. Like we said, obviously well-known as an artist, but as a songwriter himself, you know, would have had probably a massive career just on that alone, writing for other artists.
All right, we'll close with Prince music here on the Billboard Charpy podcast. Again, next week, we'll talk about more Ed Sheeran. Can he get a lucky 13th week at number one? Maybe Bruno Mars takes over. Maybe Future is on his way up. We'll see what Harry Styles does in his second week. Lady Gaga debut somewhere on the Hot 100 with The Cure. And also, Hit Songs Deconstructed, we'll go back to Yael and Dave. They're going to be back to talk about more. We're actually going to get into the Chainsmokers' Closer and some other songs. That song has just become historic, 12 weeks at number one, just like Shape of You. So we'll talk about some of what's made that song such a big hit. And that is everything for next week's Charpy podcast. We already got next week's plan, Trevor.
And for Gary, I'm Trevor. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. Enjoy the Prince.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA.
TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more. Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.